Órale pues, Raza. Welcome to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, The Beto Man, and we have a very special guest here with us, Placazo, and tattoo artist, ¿verdad?
Sí.
Órale pues. Let's start from the beginning. Where are your parents from?
Well, my dad is originally from Laredo, Texas. Mama is from Wisconsin. I don't know exactly what town over there she's from.
All right. What's his name and her name?
Alfredo Casas, and my mom is Catherine Sorensen.
All right. And do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two younger. My brother is Manuel Casas, and my the youngest is my sister Tanya.
All right. And where did you grow up?
Originally, I grew up in Wisconsin.
Orale.
Yeah, believe it or not.
All right. What city?
It's not even a city. It was a small town called Bancroft.
All right.
Population unincorporated.
¿Y cuándo te viniste para acá? When did you come to California?
The first time I came out here, I was 17 years old.
Okay, so you lived your entire life there?
Yeah.
All right. Where did you go to elementary, middle school, and high school?
I'm in Bancroft High School, and for most of my schooling was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And did you graduate?
No, I didn't end up graduating. I was more busy with my art. You know, that was my thing. So I spent more time doing that than I actually did paying attention in school.
All right. So tell me a little bit about your artwork then. When did that interest spark your imagination?
Well, I remember it pretty clear. I remember I was a young kid, maybe around 10, 11 years old, and it was Christmas time, and the teacher gave everybody the task to write down to Secret Santa what they want for Christmas. And so I wrote down, you know, the list to Santa, you know, hoping that he was going to give me G.I. Joes and airplanes. You know, I was into the wars stuff and, you know, all the stuff the little kids like to play with. So I wrote all that stuff down. And when the last day before Christmas vacation, you know, the teacher starts giving all the kids their presents. And, you know, I'm watching everybody get their present and it's all nice and wrapped up and, you know, fancy gifts. And as soon as I get mine, I get an envelope. So I'm thinking to myself, well, man, what was I bad this year again? You know, Santa he's writing a letter letting me know that I wasn't good or what. So, you know, I was all discouraged. I opened it up. I ripped it open like, what does he want? And to my surprise, it was a detailed sketch of a bunch of G.I. Joes fighting each other. And on the top, there was airplanes bombing. And it was the first time I ever seen, you know, a drawing like that. And it got me inspired. You know, I just thought to myself, wow, I could have anything that I ever wanted. All I had to do is learn how to draw it. So from that moment on, I started, you know, drawing whatever it was that I wanted.
All right. What's your specialty? Is it characters, faces, hands? Is there anything?
Anything realistic I like to do. It's more, you know, portrait, life, you know, stuff like that. I'm not really into the cartoon characters. I like more realistic shading and detail, anything that brings light and realisticness to it.
All right. And did you graduate high school?
I didn't end up graduating high school. I ended up getting my GED a few years later, though.
All right. How did that happen? Well, why did you decide to go back and get your GED?
It was more for the wrong reasons. I really didn't care about getting my GED. I did it just because my wife told me that if we did it, this is when we were living in Texas, there was an opportunity where I didn't have to work. You know, it was part of the program that we were in, the welfare stuff, where we either have to work or go to school, and me not having no education, I had to, you know, get my GED first. But they were willing to pay me to do it, so that was mostly the reason why I did it.
All right. And how do you feel about it now?
Well, honestly, I still don't feel much different because of the field that I'm in. It hasn't really made a big difference in my line of work. But I do, you know, recommend that it's, I'm trying to get my kids to get their, you know, diploma. So, you know, I do have different feelings about it now.
All right. And so did you participate in a lot of drawing contests?
Not at all. Not really. As a kid growing up, no. It was more for fun. You know, I would do it just, I would do it for friends, or I did it for myself. Once I seen the lowrider culture and got into that, that was my number one thing. You know, I wanted to learn how to draw cars, lowriders, the rims, you know, all the L.A. culture, you know, was heavy influence to me, even living out there in Wisconsin.
All right. And so then growing up in Wisconsin, did you grow up in a barrio? Did you grow up with raza? How did that occur?
No, it was a small neighborhood. The barrio was more of the trailer park. You know, it was a lot of Mexican culture in that trailer park. Most of the Latinos over there are originally from Texas. They would, you know, well, some of them were from Mexico, but, you know, a lot of them grew up in Texas and they migrated just like my dad did from Laredo or from McAllen, Brownsville, the whole Valle. They would move up to Wisconsin to work the fields. You know, over there, there's a lot of opportunity in the agriculture. So there's a lot of, open doors for migrants. So you find a lot of Mexicans over there. And you know, like my dad and his mom, they moved over there, you know, just to work at first. And once they seen that it's way different of a lifestyle than it was back in Laredo, they decided that they wanted to stay there. And so, you know, we grew up in the trailer park and we grew up, you know, with my dad and with his whole family there. You know, they grew up in the Mexican culture, you know, so I was able to still grow up like that, even though it was predominantly, white people that live mostly there, farmers and, you know, that kind of culture.
Right.
So I got both.
Would you say that you were poor?
I wouldn't say I was poor, as in we were living on the streets. You know, my dad, he provided for us. He had a job and stayed working. And then my mom, for the most part, she had a full-time job too. My dad, his job was one of those jobs that changes shifts. One day he'll work 7 to 3, and then the next day 3 to 11, and then the next day would be 11 to 7. So it wasn't a constant secure, you know, that he was going to be there. But my mom was always there for the most part. So we had what we needed to survive. You know, I don't remember ever starving, you know, as a kid growing up. So I can say that we were blessed.
Did you ever have any problems with discrimination, racism?
Yeah, there was times where I did, especially once I got older and after a lot in our life, in my life changed with my mom and dad getting divorced. My mom moved out here, so we stayed living with my dad. My dad ended up, you know, finding a new girlfriend. We moved in with her, and it was a new city, a whole new way of life. I had to kind of make a decision. Am I going to, you know, hang out with the Mexicans, which, you know, mostly where I moved to was a bigger city, and they were mostly, you know, trouble, you know, so it was either hanging out with them or it was hanging out with the skaters, you know, and you know, because that was one thing I liked to do. But, you know, not knowing them, not having no intro into their way, you know, kind of made it hard. So, you know, me knowing some of the Latinos that were there, you know, was a lot easier to go with them. And so, you know, you kind of have to make a choice, you know, who are you going to hang out with? And I chose, you know, to be with my culture, you know, so that, you know, brought a lot of problems, you know, cause you know, you would want to, okay, well now that they got my back, I got to have their back. And
before you know it, andas in mischief.
Yeah. It was, you know, you pick sides. So there's those people that pick sides and they hate you because of the color of your skin, you know, and they're willing to say stuff. But little do they know you're willing to snap back. And, you know, it always ends, you know, in a bad way.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then what city was this?
This was Stevens Point. And Wisconsin Rapids. It was still a small, you know, town compared to, you know, Riverside or L.A.
Órale. And so then, what types of work, when did you start working?
Originally, I started working when I was young. I started when I was 14 years old. It was a dishwasher job. I just did it because one of my friends that we would hang out with all the time, they had the resource to get us, me and my brother, hooked up with a job, you know, just working part-time, you know, one day a week, 2 days a week, you know. So we did it, and
what company?
It was some restaurant. I can't remember.
It's okay. What other jobs have you held?
A lot of warehouse jobs in Wisconsin. That's like the biggest opportunity, being a Latino. You know, without an education, you're gonna work in the fields, or you're gonna work in the warehousing. You know, and it's mostly agriculture. So that was most of my jobs, a forklift operator, or, you know, you're on a line and you're sorting out beans, you know, the good ones from the bad ones, mm-hmm. you know. So there wasn't really that good an opportunity, but it was a job and, you know, it made me money. So I did what I had to do.
Órale. And so then you reached 17 years old and you moved out to L.A.?
No, I moved to the Inland Empire. I was actually staying out in the high desert, Apple Valley. Hesperia out there. My ma had gotten a new boyfriend and started a new life. So, you know, we moved out there with her for a little while. And that's the first, you know, real start that I got into California. But I loved it.
Mm-hmm. And so then you stayed ever since?
No. I ended up moving back to Wisconsin. You know, I got homesick. You know, my dad, you know, friends and stuff that I missed back home. So, you know, I kind of wanted to go back and... I only stayed here for a little while the first time, yeah.
And when did you come back?
When did I come back again? Was when I was 21 or 22, something like that.
And that was permanent?
Then it's been permanent, yeah.
Okay.
It's been the last 15, 16 years I've been here.
¿Y estás casado? You're married?
Yeah, I'm married.
Since when did you get married? Más o menos.
I got married when I was 21.
Órale.
Yeah, 21, yeah. As soon as I met my wife, we got married for all the wrong reasons, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, I had gotten her pregnant, and you know, I knew that I didn't want to, you know, have a son grow up without me, you know. So I, you know, just did what I had to do at the time I felt was the right thing to do. So, you know... I just got married and my wife was in love with me. I wasn't really as much in love with her as I was in lust with her, is how I say it. So it was, you know, that's one reason why I say that it was for the wrong reasons.
And now?
And now, thank God, you know, he has changed my heart and led me to see things differently. You know, it's not more about me as it is about others. So you know, I've learned how to love someone. You know, I've learned that love isn't really a feeling, it's more of an action. You know, you can say you love someone, but if you're not willing to do what it's going to take to prove to them that you love them, then it's more just a word. You know, I believe love is more an action.
All right. And so what made you come to that conclusion? Are you a religious man?
I wouldn't say I'm religious. I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. I grew up religious. You know, my dad is, he wasn't even a really religious man. We grew up going to church in the Catholic faith. And, you know, I remember as a kid going to church, it was more, oh, okay, well, I can't wait for this to be over. You know, I didn't really, you know, get anything out of it. I wasn't really looking to get anything out of it. It was more we did it because we had to. So I just remember a lot of the things that we had to do, getting up, kneeling down, me and my brother over there fighting, arguing, and my dad pinching me in the back of the arm, behave, you know, and we had to put on this, you know, we're good, you know, we're good people, so we got to act good and you know. And you should, you know, when you're in any church, you should be, you know, respectful for other people around you. But as a kid, you don't know. You know, you just want to do what you want to do. So I didn't necessarily grow up you know, being taught anything about the Bible or being taught anything all about God. It was just, okay, just do your communion. You do what they tell you to do. And just as long as you believe, you're good to go. So it was more of a religious thing. You know, it was more of a, you follow the rules. And that kind of turned me off from the whole religion thing. And yeah, I believed in God, but I didn't want to have anything to do with man-made religion. So
what brought you back to the faith?
Well, what happened was I was just living life, you know, and living out there in Wisconsin. You know, like I said, it's a lot different than California. But, you know, over there, if you are Latino, you know, you are looked at different. So you're going to want to tend to go with your people versus, you know, versus being with another race. Even though I'm half white and half Mexican, I still, you know, look Mexican. So I still, you know, plus loving the lowrider culture, the Chicano culture. I loved it. You know, I was proud to be Mexican, so I just wanted to stick around them. But most of the people that I grew up with were more into trouble. You know, they were the ones selling the drugs. They were the ones committing the crimes and, you know, doing the evil. So, you know, I was more into that. And I just remember one time we had gotten into an issue over, you know, gang stuff. It happens over there. A lot of the gangs that are in that area are from Chicago or from Milwaukee, where it's real violent. And, you know, they try to get away from, you know, that lifestyle. So they move, you know, thinking that it's going to be better. But, you know, once it's in you, it's something you're going to take anywhere you go. So, you know, a lot of the homies I knew, you know, being from Chicago and Milwaukee, they would come over, you know, to Wisconsin and they were banging, you know, Latin King was the biggest gang over there. And, you know, that's who I wanted to be down with. So, you know, I was down to do whatever, you know, I had to do to get their approval and for them to respect me, you know. And so what happens is we end up having beef with a black gang. And, you know, not growing up in it, I didn't really know all the in and outs of it. I just knew that, well, you know what, I'm down with these homies now. So, you know, these are who I'm going to be down with. And because of the problems that we had over, you know, them and the black gang, we were at a party and some of the homies that were there, they started banging on this one guy and he left and he comes back with this black gang and we had all left. My brother was the only one there. My brother opened up the door and they pulled a gun out on his face and, you know, threatened him that, you know, this is, you know, blah, blah, blah gang and this and that. So he calls me up and he gets me to go over there to pick him up and it tells me the whole story of what happened. So from that day, you know, I had a true enemy, you know, like there's no way I'm going to let anybody punk my brother. You know, he's my little brother and, you know, I got to look out for him and I got my homies. They got my back. You know, we'll do whatever we got to do. So from that day on, you know, we were looking for him and it just so happens that, you know, the first time I ever tried any real hardcore drugs is the day that I ended up running into him. And we ended up, you know, having a lot of problems. You know, they wanted I wanted to fight them, but they didn't want to fight. They wanted to pull out guns. So they pulled out their guns. And as they were doing that, my homies were like, oh, let's go. You know, we can't be, you know, around this, man. We ain't got no straps. So we got in the car, we took off and, you know, me full of pride, I ended up sticking my hand out the window, started throwing their gang sign down, dissing them even worse. And they came up right next to us, started shooting the whole car up. And, you know, there was two bullets that just stopped, you know, right as they touched my skin. I have a little scar on my back from the burn of a bullet. That was going right towards my spine. The other one was right towards my elbow. And, you know, after that happened, man, it really, really made me start thinking like, okay, is this really what I want to do? And I was so amped up. You know, I remember just pacing back and forth that night, like, oh man, we got to do this. We got to do that. You know? And one of the homies who grew up in gang violence and knew all about it, it wasn't his first time getting shot at, you know, it was just another thing for him. So he jumped right in my face and says, well, what are you going to do about it? And, you know, it stopped me in my tracks. It made me start thinking, okay, well, you know, me not really growing up in that, not knowing, you know, the real consequences to it, it made me, you know, start thinking, okay, what am I going to do about this? Am I going to go and get a gun? Am I going to go and retaliate back against these people? Or am I going to, you know, just shut up and take it? And, you know, so I decided that we were going to do something about it. And the homies that night, they stole a car from the party that we were at. They go up to Chicago to go get some guns. And on their way there, you know, it's a few hour drive. And this is, you know, already 2-3 in the morning when this happened. So by the time they left and got into Chicago, it was 6 in the morning or so. And, you know, they're tired. And they ended up running a red light and they smashed into a cop car and got busted. So they ended up, you know, getting busted, and there was no, you know, no way to get those guns that we were planning on retaliating back with. So I believe that that God was, you know, made it happen for a reason. And that started making me think more and more, okay, man, do I really want this, or you know, or am I going to just, you know, give it all up? And then the next week or so, the same guy who shot at us, you know, he caught me slipping. I was driving and all of a sudden this car came behind me flashing their lights. And, you know, what if somebody's trying to disrespect me? So I, you know, jump out the car with my hands all out. What's up? You know, you want to do something? What's up? And he jumps out the car with his pistol in his hand and he starts walking right at me and points the gun right in my temple. And what's up now, dog? What are you going to do, man? You this, you're that, you know, you think you're all that, what up? You know? And I mean, shoot, am I really willing to bang on him then when he's got the gun and he already proved he's willing to shoot? You know, I cowarded, you know, I was a coward then. You know, I just decided, man, I'm not really about that life. You know, I just, you know, I was upset because you pulled a gun out of my brother. I ain't going to let nobody do that. And, you know, he dissed me and took off. And, you know, after that, I started, you know, kind of looking at it differently. Like, man, am I really, you know, I mean, I ain't no real gangster. Otherwise I would have been willing to die for this. And it really made me just start thinking about it, you know. But the lifestyle I was living, I already knew that if I kept living that life, I was either going to go to jail or I was going to end up dying, you know, being somebody growing up in Wisconsin where that things like that don't even happen.
All right, so let me stop you there and let me clarify a couple of things real quick just for the raza out there that's listening to us right now. I'm your host, the Beto Man, and we're here talking with Placazo. First of all, you know, the incident that you're talking about is very interesting because this is what I call a runaway train. You know, you're with some homies, and before you know it, you get into some pleito, and it starts steamrolling, you know, like a snowball, ¿verdad? Yeah. A snowball effect, and, you know, you guys went all the way to Chicago, you guys got guns, you came back, and, you know, you're just waiting for that moment. You know, it's like the devil's calling you, you know?
Yeah.
And you're going to get caught up in killing someone, and you're going to go to jail for 50 years to life. You know, because you got caught up or because of your pride or because of the gang lifestyle, you know. And the thing is that a lot of people think, well, you know, you're a coward, right? I don't think that's correct, to be honest with you. I believe that you have more respect for life than death. And that doesn't mean cowering. That means, you know, looking at life as more important than your pride. Looking at life that it's more valuable, and it is more valuable than somebody who's willing to kill you, who's not even thinking. They just, again, it's all about pride.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it has anything to do with cowardice. I think it has to do with being able to realize what's important in life, and you were able to do that. That's that magical epiphany, that realization when a light bulb goes in your head and says, you know what? This lifestyle is not for me, man. You know, yeah, you know, like me, I can kill. If I needed to, I can kill. Pressed to an issue, ¿verdad? I think we can all do that when our families are threatened, when our children are threatened. Yeah, we can do that if we have to. But I think life is more valuable than anything else.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. At first, I felt like I was a coward because... you know, I didn't do what I was, you know, living up to be. And, you know, after a little while, you know, it took a while for me to realize that the decision that I made involuntarily ended up being the right decision. And you know, I've changed my views on the way that I see life and even race, you know what I mean? It was because of the homeboys getting busted and my other good homeboy that stayed around, him getting busted. You know, most of the homies ended up getting busted. And, you know, that left me more alone and questioning, you know, okay, do I want to go to jail? Do I want to, you know, live the same life as them? You know, just to have, you know, stripes saying, yeah, I did prison time. You know, my uncle, you know, he did most of my life. He was in prison. You know, I'd never even got to know him. And my dad used to always tell me, oh, if you do this, you're going to be like your uncle. And I was always kind of, well, shoot, man, I don't mind being like my uncle. Look at him. He's all tatted up, man. He got respect. You know, ain't nobody going to talk to him like that. And
it's the glorification of the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. It's not that it can become an evil thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you disrespect life.
Yeah.
But I mean, the culture is beautiful. I mean, you know, we wear khakis, you know, Dickies, the brand Dickies, because we were poor. And a lot of it comes from poverty, you know.
Yeah.
When you don't own land, when you don't own your own house, when you don't own your own car, when you don't have a job, that's all poverty. And so a lot of times we get attracted to making quick, fast money, and that comes through drugs, right?
Yeah.
But we get caught up in that. And that drags us into an evil spot, an evil way of living that can really hurt us in the long run, ¿verdad?
Yeah.
And so then we look at poverty and we say, well, you know, there's good Chicanos and there's bad Chicanos, just like there's good white people and there's bad white people. That just happens to be, ¿verdad?
Yeah, that's true.
So did you go back to church?
No. What I did was I had this job, and the job that I had, it was a temporary job, only for a year was how long it was supposed to last. So, you know, some people start on different times than others. So as they would, as I started, you know, I had seen a couple different people come and go. And all of a sudden, this one guy started working there, and he's from, you know, from Chicago, you know, ex-gangster. You know, when I looked at him right away, I knew he was, you know, he was a homie, and, you know, he had the whole style, baggy pants, you know, he was more of a graffiti, pop locker, you know, break dancer. He was into that, you know, and he liked rap music, and, you know, we had a lot of the same interests. So, you know, that attracted me to him. You know, I just, the first time I met him, I remember I asked him, hey, what's up, dog? What do you like to do, man? You like to party? You like to drink? You like to smoke? Well, what's up? You know, what do you like to do? He was like, nah, man, I'm putting it down for the Lord. And that's the first time I ever heard that before. And that's the first time I've ever seen somebody proud, you know, to represent Jesus. And I just looked at him like, man, you're weird, man. Why would you say that? You know, that's something that you do on your own. You know, you don't have to tell me that. And that just got me to question, you know, like, why would he even want to represent that out loud? So being with him every day and watching his lifestyle, watching how he lived, it made me start thinking that, you know what, maybe God is real. And the way that I knew it is because of the things that he would do while we were over there gambling, because of the job that we had, we were able to take advantage of the system. You know, the system said, OK, you have to work 8 hours, but we're not going to be there to watch you. We need this job done. So whatever it's got to be to do the job, do it. But you could do whatever you want, and you can milk the clock. You can take advantage of the system, and there was nobody there to keep us accountable. So, you know, we were free for all. You know, we did what we wanted. We were every day we would go into work. You know, it took at least an hour to get ready to think about going in the van and going out and doing work. So while we would be in there, you know, talking this, talking that, gambling, you know, making, you know, playing card games or whatever, he would see that, and he knew that he was on the clock and getting paid by somebody. So instead of coming and hanging out with us and taking advantage of the system, he would go and he would look for things to do. He would work. He would be sweeping, cleaning up the shop, organizing, doing things that he didn't have to do. Even the boss told him, you don't have to do this. You know, you can come and hang out with us. You know, you're making us look bad. And he was, nah, you know, I can't do that. I believe that, you know, God has called me here for a reason, and I'm not supposed to be taking advantage of people, even if it is the government who's taking advantage of us. You know, I can't do that. So he had integrity. And that's the first time I ever learned about that, about doing things when nobody else is watching, or even though he wasn't going to be rewarded anymore, he wasn't going to get a raise or anything like that. He was doing it because he knew that God was watching him. And I remember one time I had brought my lunch, and, you know, I had an apple in there and I didn't feel like eating it. And I noticed that he didn't eat anything that day. So I asked him, I was like, you want to eat this apple here, man? I got it. And he took it from me and he said, thank you. And instantly he just turned his head and he said a prayer. And the way that he prayed, it looked like as if I was God giving him that apple. And I just thought to myself, dang, man, I could see if I gave you a filet mignon, you know, you being that grateful, you know, but it's just an apple, man. What are you so excited for? And the way he was grateful, just kept me thinking that, man, God must be real. And I remember the day that that I was really questioning life, I had a dream that night that I was in my dream and I had kids and I had a wife. And at the time, I didn't have any of that. But in my dream, it was like it was so real and I was seeing the future. And we were in the hills of California and we were at a park. Everything was all good. I remember seeing my family just all right there and I was smiling. And all of a sudden I looked up in the sky and I seen a big fireball coming down from the outer space. And as it came into the earth, it was like a movie where when it hit the ground, boom, it made like a big earthquake. And you seen the earth start coming up in front of you. And as it got closer and closer, boom, it hits me. And as soon as it hits me, I wake up in the middle of the dream. And I just had like, you know, sweats. And I was like so nervous, like, man, you know, like, wow, what does this mean? You know, I just felt like this dream was like the most realest dream I had ever had in my life. So the next day I went to work. And I asked my homeboy that knew about God. I said, hey, man, I had this dream. I was like, what does the Bible say about, you know, does it say anything about the end of the world or anything like that? And he knew exactly where it was at. He opens up the Bible and he starts reading it to me. And I was blown away, you know, that what I had dreamed actually is predicted in the Bible that's going to happen in the last days. And it really made me start wanting to know more.
All right. And so then do you go to church?
Yeah, I go regularly. Uh-huh. I go every Sunday. I go every Tuesday. And as much as I can, I'll go on Wednesday as well.
And you read the Bible on a regular basis?
Yes, I read it on a daily basis.
All right, yeah. Dreams are important. I mean, Joseph from the Bible had many dreams. He was captive in Egypt.
Right? Yep, yep.
And so dreams do come to people if you believe in God, verdad? And there's a lot of atheists that don't believe. Some people, there's been a test done that if you're spiritual, there is something in your brain that is active, where other people that do not believe in God, that part is turned off. It's like a light switch.
Yeah.
And so those people that see the dreams, that feel different things, those people happen to be more spiritual than others, which is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it is. You know, I've tried to look at it from, you know, all different points of view, from being atheist to being a believer in Jesus, to even being a Muslim, you know, growing up in the Middle East, you know, where Jesus is, you know, looked at as more of a prophet, but not the Messiah that the Bible claims he is. So, you know, I try to get an understanding for what everybody believes, you know, whether you're an atheist or from any different religion, or you're just spiritualist, you don't believe in the Bible, you don't believe that, you know, that it's, you know, inspired from God's word, that you just believe it's a man-made book. You know, I'm willing to talk to anyone about it. And I like to, you know, to hear other people's side of the story and why they believe what they believe.
Exactly. And that's the best way to understand, you know, different perspectives, perceptions, and vantage points, because it all depends where you're standing. hiking from. If you're standing on top of a mountain, well, you've already walked the valley, ¿verdad? Mm-hmm. So you can look down and you can see the entire valley. But if you're walking the valley, you can look up to the mountain, and we're looking at different spots. And we're always in different moments in our life, and we see the world differently at different ages, ¿verdad?
Yeah, that's true.
And so then, now let's talk about your artistry. You're a tattoo artist. How did you get into that?
Well, I started tattooing when I was 17. I remember, seeing my uncle coming in and out of prison, and he always had tattoos. And my other uncle had a few tattoos, and he had a Playboy bunny on his arm. And I always remembered as a kid, man, if I ever got a tattoo, I'd get one like my tío Meme. So that was one of the first tattoos I ever got. I originally started out in Wisconsin tattooing, and it was through a homeboy who was from LA, and he grew up in East LA and knew the whole tattoo culture. So when I got hooked up with him and started telling him how I wanted to do tattoos, but I was just doing them with a homemade needle, poking it into the skin. He had actually introduced me to a homemade machine and let me use it, so I was able to progress very quickly. Yeah, so I was 17 when I first started doing them. But to be professional, I was around 23, 24 years old, like that.
So let's just talk a little bit about tattooing, ¿verdad? Now the thing is most people use India ink, ¿verdad?
No, actually, India ink was something that most people used back in the day, back when it was before Google. Before there was the internet, before you could actually find ink somewhere, most people would use India ink, and that's what I used to use. But, after coming to the knowledge of the stuff that they put in there, I wouldn't advise using it any longer.
All right. So India ink is green, right?
It's black, but the other things that they put in it makes it turn green. And it actually has living organisms in it. So if you've ever gotten tattooed by India ink and you notice that your ink is like raised from the skin, it's most likely because there's living organisms in there that don't die when they're exposed to the air. They just go inside of your skin and inside of your bloodstream and cause that reaction.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so then let's talk about safety here, because I know a lot of Chicanos, we get drunk.
Right.
and there's supposedly an artist there, right?
Right.
And no sabe lo que está haciendo, but he's just practicing on you.
Yeah.
And because you're drunk, you do, some tonterías, and you get a tattoo que está medio chueco, a little big here and a little small there, and the old English, they miss a word, ¿verdad? God can't judge me, and they miss the D or the G.
Right. No regrets.
But what do you recommend for people to do because they're doing it? What would you say?
There's different types of people. For one, you have the people that are, that want to get tattooed and it don't matter to them whether it looks good or not. And, I used to think like that myself. I was just, I want the tattoo. I want the look. I could care less what it looks like, what the quality is. I just want the look. And then you have the type of people that I want quality over quantity. I'd rather have one nice tattoo versus having, my whole arm sleeved up, regardless of what it looks like. So you got to kind of check your motives, what you're going to get the tattoo for. If you're getting a tattoo just because you want to look cool, in the long run, you'll end up regretting it. Most likely. I know I have, from personal experience. I got a lot of tattoos when I was younger, and all of those tattoos that I had when I was younger, when I didn't care, I'm either lasering them off or I'm covering them up. So I would advise to put a lot of thought into it. A lot of people will just get, whatever they're feeling that day. I've heard a lot of people, including myself, they'll walk in somewhere and look on the wall and, oh, that looks sick. I want that. And it has no meaning to them. It's just the look, the style of it or whatever. So, with my body, I've done a lot of different tattoos, from my last name to the Mexican eagle with the flag to the Playboy bunny. And these are all, they're specific to me because of my culture. But I did it more because, oh, you know, I'm proud to be Mexican. You know, I'm proud to be Latino. So that's why I got it. I didn't really know the real reasons why the eagle and the snake are on the flag. I just knew, oh, I like that. So I got it for that reason. But I had no knowledge and education of the real reason for having it. So after, you know, being a tattoo artist for so many years now, I've started to put a lot of time and thought into, okay, what is it that I want to put on my body? And, I've learned that I could actually tell a story of my life, by the ink that I put on there. And, you could tell a lot about a person by their tattoos. If you see somebody with a bunch of number 7 off the walls, then usually they're just, quick, thinkers, you know, they don't really put a lot of thought into it. If you see a lot of junk tattoos on them, then usually they might be cheap, you know, people, you know, they don't want to spend money on that, you know, especially when they got, you know, $400 shoes, you know, a $5,000 chain, and they're walking around with $100 tats, you know, minimums, you know, all over them. That's not, you know, it tells you that they're not taking, you know, their priority in the tattoos, you know, you know, tattoos to me is more of an art. You can do it as making money, or you can make art. And, you know, I prefer to make art. And by doing that, by having the integrity and by having the Lord, guide me, I'm able to put integrity and to put all that I have into the art, to where people are willing to pay me now, and I don't have to, you know, work for, you know, dollars. Now I'm working for hundreds of dollars, you know, so, by having the quality, and, you know, trying to step it up, you know, from not being willing to stay where I'm at, but I want to grow and, learning from others, instead of saying, well, I know everything. I already know how to do this. You don't have to tell me. You know, I'm always willing to learn, even if it's from somebody that's only been doing it for a year. They might know something that I didn't know. So,
we all learn different techniques. Now, the skin, ¿verdad? When you tattoo, a lot of people don't realize that when you're young and when you grow old, the skin stretches and extracts, ¿verdad?
Yeah.
And so the tattoo doesn't look quite right, ¿verdad?
Yeah, yeah. I noticed, especially from the homies that come out of prison, they get a lot of single needle. You know, they don't have the professional machines. It's all, you know, homemade. So they just, you know, hand make a needle out of a guitar string, and when they do the tattoo at first, it looks really good, you know, because it's single needle, it's real fine detail. But as the years get older, and they're, you know, they turn 30, 40 years old, and they've been in the sun and they've been exposed to the weather, their tattoos start to change. I've noticed that the bigger that you go with a tattoo, the longer it'll last. And if you do a face the size of a quarter, eventually you won't be able to tell what it is. But if you go with the face the size of almost a real face, you know, there's a real hard chance for you to be able to look at it and say, what is that? You know, you'll always be able to tell what it is.
Okay. Now, what do you recommend? What do you recommend? I'm gonna give you two different examples, and then you can tell me what you recommend. One compañero, actually my brother, I love him to death, but he put the area code for the Inland Empire, which was Riverside, ¿verdad? And, mm-hmm. and actually Coachella, ¿verdad? And it was 619 at that time, ¿verdad?
Okay.
And then, of course, they came and they changed the area code to 951.
Yeah, right.
And he put it right on his ear, ¿verdad? Okay, that's one example.
Okay.
The other example is a compañera, who was with a guy, right? Put Harold on her arm, ¿verdad? Yeah. And then, divorces or leaves him, and then you're stuck with the name of a person, and you're stuck with an area code that changed, right?
Right.
So what do you recommend? What would you tell them?
Okay, well, I've done it a bunch of times on a lot of different people. You know, they want to get tattoos for their wife, or they want to represent where they're from. And there is a big difference between the two, because even though 619 used to be, you know, to them it still is, you know, and that's something that's harder, I would say, to regret. You know, even though right now 619 is more San Diego, it's still to them, because they got it, you know, in a certain time. It still means, you know, the same thing to them. So I wouldn't necessarily, you know, look as down as I would a girl's name. Now different people have come to get tattoos and they always have different intentions. I noticed that some people will come in saying, I want to get my wife's tattoo. And then I'll usually, you know, talk to them a little bit. Okay, well, what's the reason why you want to get your wife's tattoo? Oh, you know, I've been married to her for, you know, 20 years, you know, or however long. And, you know, she's the only girl for me. You know, I don't see myself ever leaving her, you know. So for them, I'm more willing to, okay, you know what, let's do it. Let's make it look sick. And I'll make sure I tried it my hardest to spell it right, even though I didn't graduate. But then there's the other people that I remember one specific time I'm tatting one of my homeboys and I had done a lot of work on him. And he asked me, hey, I want to get my girl to get tatted my name on her. And I was like, OK, well, you've only been with her, you know, for a little while. And he's, oh, no, you know, she's got to prove to me that she loves me, you know. So I'm like, OK, well, I guess I can't talk this guy out of it. So. I start talking to her and we did the design out and as we're drawing it out, he's like, I gotta go to the store real quick. So he takes off and I told her, I was like, well, hey, look, we could do this tattoo two different ways. I know you're pretty stuck on getting, his name on you. And I pretty much know the reason why you're doing it is because to prove to him that you love him. But we could do it like this. I can either do the name black and dark and bold so that you'll always be able to tell what it is, or I can do it with like one drop of ink, the rest of it water, so that when the tattoo is first done, it looks bold, but as time goes, it'll lighten up a lot. And sure enough, she picked the light. And so, you know, we ended up putting his name on and I ended up leaving. A week later, he calls me up and he was telling me, man, I ended up kicking that girl out. And I'm like, why? Why'd you kick her out? You know, you made her get her the tattoo of your name. She said, well, she told me what you did. She told me that you offered to do my name light or dark. And she told me that she did it light. And I was like, what? You don't love me? And boom, it was a reason to kick her out. So. You know, I don't advise, you know, doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, some people, they just want to prove, you know, well, my lady won't let me move back in unless I get her name tatted on me. Like, you know, y'all, you got to check the motive behind it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you recommend? I mean, I know people put tattoos everywhere, you know, but because, you know, there is work, right? A thing called work.
Yeah.
And you want to be presentable and you don't want to scare anybody. I mean, there's one thing when it's art and that's fine.
Yeah.
But when somebody has their entire, all their arms tattooed down,
mm-hmm.
their neck, their face, it becomes very, different, verdad?
Yeah.
And old people se asustan, verdad? Especially the raza, even white Anglos, you know, all raza se asustan. They get scared. It's like,
yeah.
You know, do you recommend to get tattoos, you know, all over your arms if you can't cover them up on your neck, on your face?
I guess it just depends on what your plans for the future are. You know, most of the people getting tattooed, you know, they're going based off of the rappers, you know, and the lifestyle of being a rapper. You know, oh, this dude's all tatted up and he's got his face blasted up with an ice cream cone and whatnot. So I want to do stuff like that. And you know, when you're young, you know, like I was too, you know, the first tattoo that I ever did was on my forearm, you know, so from that day on, I couldn't hide it. I couldn't just, you know, walk around and pretend like I didn't have it, because everywhere I would go, people would see it. And I remember for the first year, trying to hide it from my dad. And I was wearing sweaters, you know, for the summer, you know, when you don't wear a sweater in the summer, you know, because it's hot. But I had to wear one just to make sure that my dad didn't see it, because I knew he wouldn't like it. And it really wasn't worth it. You know, I would have rather just gotten it on my, you know, chest or somewhere where I could hide it a lot more easier. So when it comes to work, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, they will judge you based on what you look like, you know, and if And I always say that, you know, nowadays, you know, the culture is changing. You know, there's a lot more young people that are acceptable of tattoos, and you can walk into Denny's and see the waitress all blasted up now. So, you know, in California, it's become way more acceptable. But if you go down to Alabama, if you go to New York, you're going to stand out. You know, you're going to definitely be different, and people are going to judge you a lot different, as they do me, because I have my whole head tattooed. I have my neck tattooed. I have, you know, a tattoo on my face. You know, I have my hands, and everything that you could see is tatted up. So from now on, everywhere I walk, I got to expect that I'm going to be judged based on what I look like. Me as a tattoo artist, I can get away with being tattooed like this, and it kind of works for my advantage, because you don't want to get tattooed by somebody that don't have no tattoos, especially if you're going to get your throat tattooed. But if you plan on being a doctor or a lawyer, you don't want to get your neck all blasted up, because they most likely are not going to want to get you in there, you know. I would recommend getting your head tattooed before getting your neck tattooed, because you can always grow your hair out. I would recommend doing a shoulder tattoo or a chest tattoo, because you can always get a feel of how it feels like to get a reaction from the crowd, you know, and how they treat you versus having a tattoo on your arm or on your face. So I guess it just depends on what your plans are for the future. And who knows where it's going to be going in the next 10 years, 20 years. You know, if, you know, the way I look at it now, especially in California, I kind of, you know, it's not right, but I'll judge somebody based on their tattoos. You know, I'll look at somebody, and if they have a bunch of ugly, you know, hood tattoos, that's going to tell me, oh man, either this guy doesn't take tattoos serious. Like, he doesn't, especially out in California where good tattoos are abundant. You know, you can find a good tattoo artist. It's not that hard now. All you got to do is just be willing to pay a little bit of money, you know, so they're either they want the look, you know, or they're just cheap and they don't want to pay the price. So, you know, I kind of judge on that. But if I see somebody walking around with really good artwork, that's going to stem up a conversation. Hey, I'm willing to, you know, where'd you get that work done from? Wow, that looks clean. You know, tell me the story behind that. So, you know, if you go into an interview and the guy who's interviewing you has tattoos, well, if you got a good tattoo, you might actually get the job, because they look at you and, dang, man, you know what? It looks like you make good decisions. You get good tattoos. So,
what about safety? You know, I know that, again, I go back to the barrio and to the people just hanging out, and they're all getting a tattoo that night because they're all drunk, and they're not washing the needle. They're not putting it under alcohol. They're not, you know. What would you say?
Now, that's the old school way of doing things. You know, when I first got into tattooing, and I'm not, you know, I didn't do no apprenticeship. I didn't learn from anybody professionally. You know, I learned from the streets as well. So my whole thing was, okay, alcohol, get a lighter, and you just burn the needle, and that's how you make it sterile. But in reality, that doesn't quite sterilize the needle. You'd actually need an autoclave, or, you know, some type of unit that, you know, that costs thousands of dollars to be able to sterilize the needles, you know, to make them completely safe. You know, so I would recommend, for one, not using the same needle unless, well, no, I recommend that you don't use the same needle, because in California, the laws are different than the laws in Texas. In Texas, you can use the same needle. All you got to do is clean it and put it in the autoclave. But here in California, they require that you use a brand new needle that has been sterilized, you know, through the process that it's going to take. You know, I recommend that if you're trying to do tattoos, you know, as a profession, that you sacrifice, that you, you know, the money that you make, or you got to do what you got to do to make the money to go out and buy a professional setup. When I grew up tattooing, there wasn't no internet. I couldn't find needles and you know, all the stuff that was needed to make a tattoo safety. Whereas now we have the internet, you know, you don't have to be a licensed tattoo artist. You could go online as a average Jose and get all the stuff that you need. And, all of the resources are out there. So I would recommend to, you know, to definitely look into that. You know, all the stuff on the internet is out there that tells you on how to make things safety as far as wearing gloves. You know, when you're wearing gloves and you're tattooing somebody, don't touch anything other than the canvas you're working on. I've become so meticulous on everything that I get mad when I see somebody put anything on the workstation, you know, that shouldn't be there, because they're going to take that and they're going to move that, you know, whatever is contaminated on my workstation can easily be touched on someone else, and they can get hepatitis without even getting a tattoo, or they can get some other kind of disease. And you know, I've become very, very aware of that. And, you know, I don't want to be known as the guy who gave that guy a staph infection or anything else that might harm someone for life.
All right. So now there is licensing.
You can get licensed through the state, or no, through the county. If you're a registered tattoo artist and you want to be, you know, in a tattoo shop, then they require you to go to the county that you work in and register with them. Then you also have to go either online and get your bloodborne pathogen, which is really not that hard at all. I remember one day I had to go to a tattoo show and I needed my bloodborne and it expired. So they make you take the test every year. And I didn't have the time to do it. So I told my son, you know, I gave him some incentive. If you learn how to do this test, you know, I'll pay you to do it. So he went online, did the test, and passed it the first time, you know, without even really studying. So if he can do it and he's only 14, 15 years old, you know, anybody can do it.
Exactly. All right. And looking at tattoos, what can you tell me about the competition?
The competition is in California. There's a lot of it. You know, if you go to any other state, it doesn't seem like the tattoo scene is as big as it is out here. Out here, you got the best of the best. You know, this is where the L.A. Chicano black and gray prison style started, you know, from the prison into the streets. Before anybody in any other state was really even thinking about doing it, these guys has already, you know, made their craft and perfected it, you know, through the single needle and through the detail. So out here, you go to a tattoo show and you'll see the best tattoos, black and gray and color. So the competition is very, very high, and there's a lot of it. In order to stick out, you know, there's two different types of tattooers that are out there. There's the tattooers that you'll go on Google, or you'll go in a flash book and you'll get all the patterns and you'll trace them and you'll mimic someone else's art, or you'll mimic someone else's picture. And then there's the tattoo artist that you give them the idea and they can create it. They can draw it all out. They can vision it and they can make it, you know, come to life where you can't go on Google and get that. So being an artist definitely gives you more advantages than being just a Google artist, Photoshop artist, you know.
Exactly. That's interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell the youngsters out there about the gang lifestyle?
I would recommend, man, that you really, you know, search your heart, man, and find out the reasons why you want to be in the gang. You know, for me, I wanted to be in it because of the friendship. You know, they were my brothers. You know, they were the homies. You know, they would have your back and they would be down for you. You know, no matter what happens, they'll be there for you. You want people around you that are faithful, in reality, is what I was looking for. I was looking for somebody to love me, even though I wasn't, you know, the perfect person, the perfect candidate, you know. So, you know, look at your heart and see what it is that you're really in this for. If you're looking for acceptance, the Lord Jesus loves you as you are, and you don't have to change a thing about you. You can be that flawed person, and God will accept you into his gang, and you don't have to get beat up to go in there. You don't have to prove yourself by committing crimes that could put you away in prison, where when you're in prison, all of a sudden everybody forgets you. You know, God, he will require for you to do things, you know, to get with him, but he's already paid the price. So it's free admission. All you got to do is believe that Jesus came and died for your sins, and that he rose from the dead, and that he gives new life to those who believe and trust in him. And he says that he is the only way, truth, and the life to God the Father. There's no other way to get to God except through Jesus. So if you trust him with all your heart, then you are made right in God's eyes, even though we are flawed and stained and not perfect people. Jesus came, paid the price, lived the life that no gangster could. He lived the most realest, humble life and always kept it real, 100. And he's faithful. He won't turn his back on us when we've done him wrong. Even though I'm a Christian and I've been living for the Lord, I've still, you know, I've failed him continually. And he still hasn't turned my back or turned his back on me, nor will he. And that's his promise. So trust him, man, because he's the ultimate leader. And he's going to lead you in a path that will give you fulfillment and give you a purpose.
All right. So if people want to get a hold of you or just look at your artwork, where could they go?
You can either go on Facebook or Instagram, look up Placazo Tattoo or Placazo Tattoos, and you can see me all on there, or you can look on Google as well.
All right. Now, you only do tattoos if someone recommends, ¿verdad?
Yes, yes. I've built up a clientele good enough now where I just do it by recommendation. Unfortunately, everybody, you know, wants a Ferrari. Everybody wants a Lamborghini, you know, but is everybody willing to pay for a Lamborghini? No. So, you know, by doing it by recommendation or by referral, it kind of cuts out all the people that want to just waste your time, ask you 50 questions, and then not end up doing it. And, you know, I have my wife and my kids, and they require a lot of time from me. And between that and my regular clientele that I have, it's really hard to make time to answer a lot of other questions or other things that ain't going to lead anywhere. So I just do it, you know, through that. And just as long as I stay busy like that, I'll continue doing it that way.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us. We want to thank you for coming in.
All right. Thank you, Beto.
All right, that's going to do it for us, Raza. We've been talking here with Placazo, a tattoo artist, and you've been listening to The Beto Man. Remember to stay tuned to Chicano Highlights, interviews from individuals of our community, the barrio, politicians, activists, community people. Everybody that you can think of is here on Radio Aslan, KUCR 88.3 FM. Simultaneously live on KUCR.org, also podcasting on EastLAReview.com and podcasting on ChicanoTexMex.com. Also joining us now on KERU 88.5 FM in Blythe, California, and KPFK in 90.7 in Los Angeles. Órale pues, ahí te guacho. Hasta la próxima.